I'd like to show you why knowing your why is the start of your journey. Without a strong why, it can be so difficult to reach your maximum potential. My name is Dr. Jason Ballara, and every week I meet with real estate investors and mindset specialists that are taking action in order to build a life according to their own terms. We will break down what drives successful people and allows them to achieve at such a high level. If you are a professional wanting to break through, or simply someone that wants to hear an inspiring story, the Know Your Why podcast is made for you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast. Today, I'm here with Caleb Johnson. Caleb has been an entrepreneur since age 18. He has multiple deals and assets under management, and he's been blessed to acquire over $9 million worth of real estate before 25. So, Caleb, I'm going to stop there because I think it's going to be way more interesting for the listeners to hear your story from you. But first, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for coming on the show today. I appreciate you taking out the time.
Hi, Jason. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, will you go ahead and just kind of give us your story, your background? Sounds like you're a pretty young guy anyway, but started at quite a young age. So it'll be interesting to kind of hear how that all came together.
Yeah. So where I normally start is with my parents, and not because that's how I got into investing. And it wasn't because my parents were wealthy. They were actually the opposite, and they had day jobs. Now, I saw the life that they had. I knew I didn't want that for myself. And I really took that to heart when my mom had surgery, and she was around 6 years old. She took about 3 months off of work to heal and recover, and her plan was to live off of her savings. Now, at the end of 3 months, she realized that she wasn't ready to go back to work, and she wasn't healed properly. But she was stuck between this rock and a hard place of either deciding, okay, do I go back to work and make money because I have no money coming in, but potentially hurt myself, or do I stay home and recover properly, but prolong retiring by a couple of years? And so she made the very tough decision to go back to work and make money. And Jason, I would see her come home in tears, crying because she was in literally so much pain. And I love the name of your podcast, because when I started off, that was my why. That was my mom was my why, because I wanted to help her retire early. And at the same time, I didn't want to go through what she went through myself when I was 6 years old, you know, having a job kind of dictate what I had to do, where my money was coming from. And I'm not dissing jobs at all. I think we do need jobs, you know, especially specific jobs. And if someone likes what they do working, then praise God, that's great. But for me, I'm just not wired that way. So that's how I got started in investing.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, with a lot of guests and even myself, you know, you're a lot of times that journey towards entrepreneurship or investing, whatever, you know, sort of avenue it goes, it does start with a pain point. And so I think, you know, whether it's like the example of your mom, a family pain point, or someone, you know, has their own struggles in life, and they realize that's not the way they want to live. And you kind of, so you try to turn that direction. And many people don't unfortunately take those lessons and, you know, sort of turn them to good. But I think one of the great things about doing this podcast is just finding that the people that have used, you know, adversity and turned it to a positive and found a way to kind of move through and grow and be, you know, have it ultimately benefit their lives and benefit their family's lives. So you saw, you know, sort of the position you didn't want to be in. You saw, you know, you didn't want to be at an age where you had to work despite, you know, I'm 48 and I can tell you your body definitely starts to give you some pushback as you get older. But what did you do? What steps did you take to kind of start that journey when you realized you didn't you know, didn't want to end up in that situation?
Well, I knew I needed to learn. And when I learned that 90% of millionaires had gotten their millions through real estate investing, I knew that I wanted to learn specifically about investing in real estate. And where I went to do that was free resources like Bigger Pockets, still has a great podcast. Now they have about 50 podcasts, it seems like. But other free resources like YouTube. And I also knew for myself that I needed a mentor. I needed someone in my life that had been through the weeds, they'd been through the trenches, and they could guide and direct me and really save me blood, sweat, and tears and headache. So I knew that in the back of my mind. And of course, the mentor just didn't show up at my desk. But one day, a gentleman walked through the doors of my restaurant where I worked at. And he, long story short, he was a real estate agent and had owned a couple properties, just rentals. And he gave us a couple business cards. And I held onto that business card for 2 months before I called him up. But at a certain time, I decided I just got to call this guy. And I said, "Hey, Gilbert, my name's Caleb. You don't know me, but you came into my restaurant a little while ago. And I know you own some rentals. And I want to work for you for free so you can teach me what you know." And I told him specifically, "I'll clean your toilets at 2 a.m. I don't care. I just want to learn from you. So I'll do anything." And he kind of chuckled at that and said, "Okay, why don't you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad 6 times and then give me a call back?" And so I said, "Okay." I did that. And then I called him back and I said, "Hey, Gilbert, I read that 6 times. And he said, "Okay, read Cashflow Quadrant 6 times again." And I said, "Okay." So I did it again. And I think we did that song and dance show one other time. And he got to a point where he said, "Okay, Caleb, I know you're serious. Let's talk more and get coffee." So I ended up working with him as the agent to find my first deal. And he connected me with the contractors, the lenders that could work with my financial background. And just being 18, 19 years old, I did not have a whole lot of capital that I was sitting on to buy a property. So they really helped me to do that. And I think that was finding that mentor and free education for me was the starting point that I needed.
Yeah. Mentors are tremendously important. I've had really throughout my whole life been really lucky to have some great mentors. And I've talked a lot about on the podcast about, you know, sort of the importance of that, especially in, you know, in real estate, finding someone that, you know, kind of is steps ahead of you doing what you want to do and, you know, sort of following in their footsteps, using their blueprint. But interestingly, I think this is a good thing to point out. You know, a lot of people there's a lot of paid mentorships, right? There's a lot of people that, you know, put out some courses, you know, kind of, so there's in many ways a lot of, I think sometimes those types of programs get a bad name. They, you know, they have that sort of guru label attached to them and people think, you know, you shouldn't pay for this. That's the point of what I'm getting at here is that it's not the only way to do it, right? So you can either do what you did, which is go find someone sort of organically to mentor you where, and I wouldn't say that it's free. I'm sure you worked hard for it. So it's just that, you know, you're kind of doing that apprenticeship model versus the sort of pay to play. And it all comes down to what resources you have. What value do you have? Do you have time? Do you have money? Do you have, you know, kind of something that, you know, provides value to whoever that mentor is? And so I think people sometimes get in this space where they're like, "Well, I can't afford to pay, you know, $20,000 for this mentorship." But what you can do is go offer to work for someone for free and make their lives easier. And in return, they'll teach you the business. So good for you for doing that and taking that route and realizing that that was an opportunity at that age. So when you got your first rental, you said, you know, you didn't necessarily have the capital? How did you structure that, you know, kind of first deal? What did it look like for you? You know, you were introduced to these lenders and all of that. How did that kind of go? Because I think that's something that other people that are looking to get started could really find a lot of inspiration in.
Yeah. And Jason, you hit on a good note that wherever you are financially, whatever your background is, there's a way to do it. It's just finding the way that one works for you and that you can actually do. And for me at that time, I was going to house hack a property. So that means owner occupied. I'm going to live in one unit or one bedroom and rent out the other bedrooms or units. And my first property was a fourplex, and that was in a C-minus neighborhood. So one of my tenants was a drug dealer. Another was a hoarder. So I was able to acquire that property for only 3.5% down. So it cost from like $10,000 to $15,000 to actually buy it, including reserves and all that. So I had been saving up since I had been working since 15, 16 years old. So I had always had some money sitting on the sidelines, and I had just had enough to get that done. So again, my mentor was really helpful and connecting me with the contractors that could save me time and money. Like, I remember vividly the first unit I ever renovated was the hoarder's unit, and gosh, talk about gross. I mean, yeah. Mice, roaches, and I lived next door. So that meant I had mice and roaches.
Right.
But ultimately got rid of those, but there was so much nicotine. I remember vividly there was like a painting or a cross or something that they had on the wall, and there was so much nicotine. They lived there for 7 years. The nicotine was literally dripping off the wall and outlined this cross, I think. And so it was an experience, you know, but I think it goes back to wherever you are. You know, I didn't have in my market in Phoenix, I couldn't go into the A-plus neighborhood and buy a fourplex because that was going to cost me $800 to $1 million. I could go to a C-minus neighborhood or a C neighborhood that was gentrifying and coming up in the market cycle and, you know, deal with a hoarder and a drug dealer, but it cash flowed at the end of it, $1,200 a month, and then ultimately sold it for a really nice profit in less than 2 years. And so wherever you are, I think there's a way to get it done. It just requires you to ask how can I get this done?
Yeah. And that's a great point. You know, don't look at things from this, you know, well, I can't afford it, or I can't do this. It's how can I afford it? How can I do this? And your, that story, she doesn't anymore, but my mom smoked growing up. I've seen that, that outline around things. It's a not pretty. But the idea too is it's not just asking how, it's being willing to make those sacrifices that you need to get that ball rolling, to make those first steps. So there's a lot of people that just would stop right there and say, well, I'm not going to do this because I have to live in a, you know, C-class neighborhood with a drug dealer and a hoarder. You know, I'm not going to do it because this unit where the hoarder was living is disgusting. And I just don't like people. That'll be it. That'll be the end. That'll be the end of the story for a lot of folks. And so, but, you know, you were able to do that, push through, do what it took, and then, you know, sort of start your investing journey with a win. You were cash flowing and you were able to have a profit when you sold. So there's in the beginning, you know, the suggestion out there, you'll see, you know, don't work in your business, work on your business, that kind of thing. In the beginning, I think you're in it. You're in, mm-hmm. you got to do whatever it takes. You have to do the dirty work. You have to scrub the nicotine off the walls. You have to paint, you have to do the renovations yourself. Unless you're starting the journey with a bunch of money, what you have is your own labor, basically your own, mm-hmm. you know, your own willingness to put in the work. So it's definitely something that I think is a great, you know, sort of lesson for people listening to, you know, hear what you did and that, you know, that sacrifice that you made and But now tell us, you know, sort of what that did for you. What was that from, you know, like a springboarding type standpoint?
Oh yeah. Well, that taught me so much. It taught me, like, that one unit that I renovated, it took me 2 months and about $7,000. And then I hired out the work for the drug dealer's unit, and all of his crap was still there because he got evicted. So it was actually more work than the hoarder, and it cost me $7,500 in 2 weeks. And so I saved in vacancy costs just by hiring that out. Plus, I had less blood, sweat, and tears into the property, and I could go find another deal that would make cash flow as well during that time that it would take me to renovate that unit. So I learned a ton from that property, and I had capital from that sell to go 1031 into a retail facility, which was another cash flowing property, at least is about to be cash flowing. And it connected me, you know, it really just, you hear that the first deal is the hardest. And so once you get that first deal done, then the next deal will follow a lot quicker than that first one did. And I 100% agree. So it, one, gave me the capital to actually do another deal. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it really gave me the knowledge, the confidence, the wisdom for me to go buy the second deal and the third deal and then scale from there.
Yeah. So where does your portfolio sit now?
So today, I've been investing for a total of 6 years now, and we own 6 assets across 3 states, totaling $12 million.
Awesome. Awesome. And what do you, like, what's your focus? You know, I think as we just talked about, when you're beginning, when you're starting that journey, you're doing everything. You're doing the renovations. You quickly learned that that's not the best use of your time. You're doing acquisitions. You're doing, what are you, what phase are you in now? Are you still kind of doing it all yourself? Have you brought on team members? What's the growth trajectory look like for you?
Well, starting off, especially in commercial, I again had to find a mentor to really teach me and coach me up. I didn't have a lot of money to go buy a $50,000, $30,000 program, which I think I actually wish that I did, and I could just invest that and then learn, build those connections in that meetup. But for me, I found someone that had been doing what I wanted, that I needed to do, and they had what I wanted, that experience. They had been underwriting for about 18 months. So I gave my time and I learned underwriting from him, and in turn, I brought him deals. So I think we closed 4 deals together in about a year. And so that was what kind of helped me get to that next level. And it's not always sunshine and rainbows. You know, I hear when you're starting your company, there's somewhat of a smoke screen, right? You have to say, well, I've acquired XYZ $1 million, and this is our company, and we're this firm, and we have all these special features. And often, I mean, I could start a company right now that's an LLC, and I own Johnson LLC. I own a company. So there is a smoke screen once you start. And I think that's with any business, right? And so you could own 0.5% of this $250 million asset. And so now you can say you have assets under management of $250 million. So I say that just so the listeners, if you're new starting off, it's not all amazing, right? I think in complete honesty, Jason, in the 3 years I've been doing this, the 3 years of commercial, I've probably made $30,000 on those transactions. So it's not all that in a bag of chips. Once you start scaling and you can find the right partners, I think that will contribute a lot to your growth. And we are still building and focusing on bigger projects. And I will say, though, at the same time, I know so much more today than I did a year ago, 2 years ago, and I had the connections to take down that $100 million asset. So that can lead to enough income that can cover me for years, right? And I think that what got me turned on to commercial real estate was at this first real estate meetup, the speaker, he shared his first deal with us and what the numbers look like. And so he owned that asset for 4 years. They sold it and he alone made $2.5 million. And so if you're listening to this, imagine if $2.5 million showed up in your bank account tomorrow or today. What would that do for your family? So if you just do one deal a year, I mean, that's the legacy wealth that you're looking at. So starting off, it is a grind. It is challenging. I mean, I've had moments where I'm working at a day job as well at 9 o'clock and I'm in tears and I'm thinking, when is this going to pay off? Right. But there is a light at the end of the road. You just have to keep working hard at it.
Yeah, but it's a great point. The real estate is definitely not a get rich quick scheme, but it is really a get rich guaranteed scheme pretty much. I mean, there's, you'd have to do it really wrong to not make money, but it's in the long run. And so that growth trajectory tends to be really, really slow, really, really sort of flat across the, you know, first number of years. And a lot of it's going to have to do with the market. So it's like, if you get lucky enough to get in a really hot market, your growth trajectory can go up faster. If you're in, you know, the market that we're in right now, where things are a little bit slower, you really have to be thinking about this as, what does this look like in a 5 or 10 year time horizon? And a lot of people just don't have the patience to do it. And that's why not everybody does it, right? That's really the reason is the willingness to believe in the vision, believe in the future, and kind of ride it out when it's hard and when you're not making much money in the beginning, because you know, I think, and I didn't really believe this at first, but I think one of the maybe best ways for people to have little, check-ins along the journey with themselves, little pep talks, is to track your net worth, because you're not, like, as you said, like, you're making $30,000 in 3 years on these transactions. Like, yes, that's the money that comes into your pocket. But if you're starting to, if you track the net worth and the value of, you know, the assets that you own, the deals that you're a part of, and those are going up over time, and you know, at some point there'll be an exit and then you're going to realize that money. And so you can see, although your bank account may not be going up, your net worth calculation should be going up. And honestly, if it's not, you need to reassess what you're doing and figure out why not. But I love that you pointed that out. The other thing that I thought was really it's interesting and true is, you know, sort of that the smokescreen thing and that when you're starting out, you certainly feel like you need to, demonstrate some level of competency. And you do that by talking about, you know, assets under management or unit count and things like that. But what you do have to realize is that, as you said, like, you could be an extremely small portion of a deal that's $100 million versus someone who might own all on their own a deal that's worth $200,000. And what that means to you personally as a financially and both experientially, it may be vastly different to be a part of that smaller deal because you're a bigger chunk of it. But the reason why people like to get into those bigger deals is for exactly what you pointed out. You're getting the network, you're getting the knowledge, you're getting the resources in place so that at some point, now you're doing those $100 million deals. You're at the forefront of them. So, but what often gets reported on social media is, oh yeah, you know, we just closed a $100 million deal. And it's like, well, what did you do for that deal? I raised a little capital or whatever it is. And not that those accomplishments are not meaningful, but the point is that people seeing that and maybe early on in their journey feeling like they're not doing what they should be doing or not as successful as what they're seeing on social media, it is a bit of a smokescreen. It is, I only really report my unit count on the deals that I actually manage. Like I don't really talk about the deals that I'm invested in, as a small, you know, in a small portion. So I think that, but again, it doesn't really matter. Like it's a metric. It doesn't, you know, unit count doesn't matter. Assets under management, I think maybe is probably a little more, an of accurate, sort of metric, I guess, for experience, if you're actually reporting it, accurately. But it's, these are things that people starting out, people early on in real estate, might not realize that when they're seeing, oh, this person just started, you know, 6 months ago, and they have, you know, they already have 300 units. They might have, you know, raised a very small amount of capital for that and be doing a little bit of asset management or something like that. That's great. That's great experience for them, but don't feel like that, you know, seeing that unit count is the most important component in that. What you want to know is like, what are they learning from it, especially in the beginning?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you kind of pointed those things out. I do think sometimes it, that I think actually smokescreen is a great term for it, in that, you know, you want to look like you have the experience. And so you report all these things, but people that are, you know, you want to dig a little bit deeper. And I think just for yourself, if you're in the business, don't be so worried about that. Worry about what are you actually learning? What are your lessons? What is your, you know, what are your connections, your network that you're developing from each of these deals? That's really the main thing. And it's like you said, you worked for free because that got you the connections and the network that you needed to really start doing things.
Right. And I will say too, I'm not bashing anyone that does that smokescreen, because I did that starting off.
Everybody does it. Yeah. Everybody does it.
Yeah. You need to do that when you start off, actually. And Let's say you're green, you don't have anything. What do you do? Well, you say, hey, I'm partnering with XYZ person, and they own a portfolio of 5,000 units or whatever. So especially when I was trying to raise capital from, let's say I'm 22 years old and I was trying to raise capital, that's a really challenging thing, because why would anyone believe you? And me personally, as Caleb, why, I don't want to invest in someone that's green. Like, I don't want to invest in you if it's your first deal, unless there's a reason why I would. And so the reason that I would is if your partner is in on the deal and they like the deal and they sign off and they have all this experience. So it's not bashing the smoke screen at all. It's really, you do have to do that to some extent when you're starting off. But like you said, Jason, whenever you're starting off and you see this person that's been investing for 6 months and they have 1,000 units under management, you know, they might be saying that they're limited partners, or they've raised $100,000 in this 5,000 unit portfolio. And so now they can say that. So don't get discouraged by that either.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up. I don't want people to think that we're saying, oh, you know, people are being malicious or, you know, falsely reporting. This is more a sense of if you're looking at these numbers that people are, you know, sort of reporting as far as their assets under management, things like that, and comparing yourself to them and thinking it, and that's holding you back because you feel negative about it. What's important to realize is that, you know, you probably don't know exactly what is behind those numbers, and don't worry about, don't play the comparison game. Just get some value out of every deal that you do. And most of the time in the beginning, the value is not the money. Most of the time in the beginning, the value is network experience, and growth. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So that's kind of, I don't want people to think here we are like, oh, these jerks that are over-reporting their portfolios. That's not it at all. It's more just don't get caught up in, because I did it. When I started, I would listen to the Bigger Pockets podcast, and like, you know, the title is meant to be catchy. It's meant to be a hook, but it'd be like, you know, 500 units in 18 months. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, this, like, I need to listen to this one. I want to be that person. And so I understand, you know, people's urges for things to happen quickly. And when it doesn't happen quickly, you start to feel, you know, some self-doubt and be, you know, might want to give up because you saw someone else had 500 units in 18 months. But like, that's not exactly accurate. It might be for some people might be phenomenal. They might do that. But the reality is that, you know, for most of us, it's a slow growth trajectory. And, you know, you're reporting what you're a part of, but you don't know what the whole story is. So I just want people not to be discouraged. Don't be discouraged by other people's success. Be encouraged by it and realize, you know, kind of that you can do it as well. So, and that, you know, sort of partnering with other people, leveraging their experience, all of that goes into it, both from I think, you know, from a capital raising standpoint, from an investor relationship standpoint, but also from a self-confidence standpoint and from a logistical or tactical, the lenders won't give you, you can't get a loan if you don't have someone in the deal with the experience. So there's a lot of, you know, kind of reasons for those types of ways of reporting what, you know, what the experience level is. But I think it's an important topic, and maybe I went off track a little bit, but I do want people to realize, like, don't look at those things and compare yourself. Caleb, I want to switch gears here and get to ask you questions that I ask every guest. And the first one, I know you touched on it a little bit. It's, you know, the name of the show is Know Your Why. And so I always ask everyone, what is your why? And I know you mentioned, you know, your mom really was your why. And I'm interested if you want to expand on that, but also if that focus has evolved at all for you, you know, throughout your journey.
Yeah, and that has evolved. Starting off, that was my motivating why. And now, since it has evolved, I really feel called to just share the love of Christ, you know, and I'm a Christian, and that's why I'm on this world. And if I know some way that we can have eternal life, then I definitely want to share that with as many people as possible. And I relate that to if you have a light on a desk, you don't put a bowl over it and hide it, right? I want that light to shine out through the whole room. So that's my why. And also just sharing love and just being a light and encouragement to others.
Awesome. Tell us something about yourself that isn't common knowledge, special skill, a hobby, anything that you're you know, willing to share.
Yeah, so I would say I used to compete in bodybuilding. And I still am an avid gym enthusiast. I enjoy that. And I am not training for a show at the moment, but that's definitely a hobby of mine. And I would do it all natural. So don't picture me as having to walk sideways through doors or anything, but that's a hobby of mine.
Cool. I have friends who have done it as well. It's like, it is a serious level of dedication, like during in the prep for a show. I'm just like, it kind of shocking. I love exercise and I love working out, but I have never wanted to go, you know, that deep into it. So it is really impressive to see people get to that, you know, level of being within a show. When people hear this and they want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
So they could either go to redseacapitalgroup.com, and our podcast is there, and just other free resources, or they can check us out on LinkedIn, Facebook at Caleb Johnson or Red Sea Capital Group.
And then final question for you, Caleb, what's a piece of advice that you would give to someone who's getting started? They want to follow in your footsteps. They hear this and they think, wow, this guy was pretty young and he did it right. What should they do to kind of be right behind you?
Find a mentor that is, I'd say, 6 to 18 months ahead of you. Now, if you're starting off, I wouldn't recommend going to Grant Cardone by any means, someone that's at a whole nother level. I'm not saying you won't learn from him at all. You definitely will. Now, at the same time, working with someone that is just a little bit ahead of you will really be able to show you and give you digestible steps to get to where they are. And I think starting off, that is really important. And it's also important because you can see, you have proof of concept, right? If when I'm starting off, I think, oh, I see these guys on YouTube, Instagram, and they have millions of dollars, and I wonder how they put their pants on. You know, it's the same way as you and I, Jason, just so you know. But actually being able to see someone in real life have what you want is really inspiring, at least for me. And that's what I'd say for anyone that's wanting to start off.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. It's you can use the Grant Cardones and the people that have, you know, been in the game for a long time as a long-term vision and inspiration, but your ability to relate to someone who owns their own planes and, you know, can be, it's just not where you're going to be at the beginning. So it is better to have someone that has a more intimate understanding of where you are in the process. So I think the other great thing about it is, like, if you're you know, mentoring with someone who is, you know, 6 to 18 months ahead of you, you can actually, you know, sort of bounce ideas off each other. It's not just a one-way street at that point. Now you can, you know, sort of participate. And I think that's the way that you learn as well. So I think it's a really great point to have out there. Listen, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate you taking your time. People won't know this when they're listening, but Saturday morning. So I do appreciate people giving up their time anytime, but, you know, a morning on a weekend, I understand is valuable. So thank you. Thank you for everything that you shared today.
I appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks listening, when you hear this, I'm sure you're going to love to hear Caleb's story. Please like, rate, and review the show so we can get more great guests like him on. Thank you all.
I'd like to show you why knowing your why is the start of your journey. Without a strong why, it can be so difficult to reach your maximum potential. My name is Dr. Jason Ballara, and every week I meet with real estate investors and mindset specialists that are taking action in order to build a life according to their own terms. We will break down what drives successful people and allows them to achieve at such a high level. If you are a professional wanting to break through, or simply someone that wants to hear an inspiring story, the Know Your Why podcast is made for you.